And joining me right now here on the phone line is the radio play-by-play man for the Orlando Magic. We got to recap that Game 7 loss yesterday there in Cleveland. This guy does a great job. His name is Jake Chapman. Jake, how you doing today?
I'm good, Mark. How are you, bud?
I'm a little down today. That was a tough loss. What happened yesterday, buddy?
It was a tough loss. It was, a hell of a series, right? I mean, both teams, I thought, brought it. It was physical. It was everything you asked for in a playoff series, especially for a young Magic team. I mean, I'm so appreciative, obviously, from a personal standpoint, but I'm so grateful for this team and what that experience is going to mean for them long term. I think, yes, you came up a little bit short. You had an 18-point lead yesterday, but you were on the road, and I think it's proof positive and a reminder that that sort of random game in November where you miss a bunch of free throws, or the one in January where you turn the ball over too much, pays dividends. We were a game behind the Cavs for the 4 seed in the Eastern Conference. So you feel like if you might have had home court advantage for that series, it might have gone differently. But it is what it is. It's a game of inches, and every win and every play throughout the regular season, all 82 games, we know how tedious it can be. But all that stuff's important. So you came up just a little bit short to a team that I think had a little bit more desperation just as far as the future of Donovan Mitchell and the head coach and all of that stuff. They were there a year prior, and they got bounced in 5 games last year by the New York Knicks. So they had that experience. We hadn't had it yet, and now we have. And hopefully it sort of propels you into the offseason. Everybody gets away for a little bit, and then you get back to work, and you try to get back to that stage next year, and then you try to get a little bit further.
The Magic had the lead at the half, but was there a moment where you're like, uh-oh, Cleveland's woke up in this basketball game?
Well, it was even before the half, because it was 18 points in the second quarter, and then they had kind of a little flurry. Caris LeVert, some of their bench guys, played well, and you felt like they kind of took the momentum back even before we went into the halftime locker room. 18 points versus what it was at halftime, which was, hold on, off the top of my head, 10 points. Is a big difference, right? Like, you felt like they were back in the game when the second half started, and then they came out in the third quarter and blew your doors off, and they hadn't done that throughout the series very often. So you got to give them a lot of credit. I mean, we missed a whole bunch of shots throughout the game, not just in the second half, in close, in the paint. We shot less than 33% in the paint, and that's not going to get it done. Look, offense was a struggle for the team all year. They played great defense, I think. Second half of that game, you let go of the rope a little bit on the defensive end. LeVert, I thought, was the X factor. He had 15 points off the bench. They didn't play very well off the bench for most of the series. They got 8 more from Sam Merrill. That was a game where they outscored the Magic second unit. And that didn't happen very often throughout the series. Any game where, Franz and Jalen went a combined 3 of 28, it was going to be tough to win. And again, you got to give the Cavs defense credit for that. But even Paolo, who scored 38 points and was basically your sole source of offense, he was 10 of 28 from the field, Mark. He struggled to shooting the ball. He just got a lot of work done at the free throw line. He made 15 free throws, for crying out loud. So the offense just came up a little bit short. And, you know, unfortunately, over the course of the series, getting back to my original point, every time we were in that building, it was a struggle to score points. So you kind of had a sense that they were going to have to be able to manufacture some offense from somewhere. And they just couldn't quite get it done. And then on the defensive end, I think they ran out of gas a little bit in the second half.
Does it weird you out that the Magic won 3 playoff games all at home and are not moving on to the next round of the playoffs?
No, I mean, that's what it is. That's why home court advantage is so important. That's why getting the top 4 seed is so important. That first round matchup, you know, I think if you're a 2 or 3 seed, you sort of feel like you've got deeper aspirations. But for us, you think about the last day of the year, that Milwaukee game, game 82. If we had lost that game, you're talking about a play-in scenario, Miami or Philly. And if you lose 2 games, boom, boom, your season could end real quick. So I think it was a win just to get into the top 6 in the Eastern Conference. But
yes,
all season long, this young Magic team played so much better at home than they did out on the road. You kind of knew it was going to be a struggle to steal a game in Cleveland, and it was.
When did it hit you the season was over?
I don't know, late in the fourth quarter, as there was a really costly turnover. there were a few buckets. Mobley had a big bucket and added one. You know, you just sort of get a sense, okay, do you keep on looking up at the clock? Time and clock, scoring and time, that's sort of what goes through your head as you're doing play-by-play. And as you keep looking up and it's like, okay, it's still 10 points and now there's only 2:50 left or whatever, you know, there's kind of like that countdown clock going on in your head as you're doing play-by-play. So you get a sense in the fourth quarter as time slips away that that's going to be it. And then, you know, you get on the bus and everybody's kind of quiet. But for us, I think it's a little bit different than, you know, had Cleveland lost that game, for instance, that would have been like an existential loss to the organization. They would have gotten on the bus and they would have said, oh, man, changes are coming. This sucks. For us, I think we just got on the bus and pretty quickly the thought was, boy, that was a pretty special year and hopefully the beginning of something really special.
All right, for me, I think when Mitchell, he hit this, I don't know, 30-foot three-pointer at about the 8-9 minute mark in the fourth quarter, and it just, the lead, I said, that was about it. My question for you is, how good was Mitchell in game 6 and 7 to carve up the Magic?
Yeah, I mean, he was fantastic. He was the best player in the series. Somebody asked me before the series, I think it was a Cleveland station, the Cavs win if, and I said, if Donovan Mitchell's the best player in the series, and you sort of expected he would be, which that was kind of my way of saying, I think the Cavs should be favored and the Cavs should win this series. And you got to credit the Magic. I mean, they did a fantastic job, in many of the games. Mitchell had 30 in game one, and then until that game 6 explosion, we kind of held them, you know, in under control a little bit. There were a few 35% from the field games in there. But he came on with a vengeance at the end of the series. He's so fast and he's so herky-jerky when he gets in the lane, you know. Reminds me of Dwayne Wade. He moves like Wade used to, splitting double teams and kind of planting left and then bouncing right and still being able to have enough explosion to get a shot up and he uses glass. He's just a really smart player. A great kid too. Like he's about everything you want your franchise player to be about. So you know, for 7 games you're going toe-to-toe with him, he's kind of your enemy. But moving on, and I think the Celtics will probably smack him around, I gotta be honest, but moving on, that's an easy team and guy to root for. I just think Mitchell's he's one of the best we have in the league.
We're here with Jake Chapman, radio play-by-play man for the Orlando Magic, recapping game 7. All right, go back to Paolo. I feel like in year 2, he is getting superstar calls where he's driving to the lane and they're giving him the call. Do you feel that way, even though he just finished his second year?
Well, at times, I think Cleveland lost composure for stretches throughout the series, especially when we were playing in our building. And I think part of it was their head coach. Like, did you notice the difference in demeanor between Victor Staff? And I know there's a lot of pressure. I think Jamie Victor Staff's a pretty good coach. I know there's a lot of pressure there, but he's going in on the refs, you know, every 3 or 4 calls. Max Strus is complaining the whole time. And I know we have guys who do the same. I'm not saying we're innocent in that. But I thought you could sort of sense when Paolo would get going, there was just kind of like this lack of leadership. And part of it, I think, is Mitchell is the leader, and he's not one of their better defensive players. Mobley's their best defensive player, and he don't say nothing because he's still young, and I'm not sure that's necessarily his sort of approach. But it goes back to this. Paolo Banchero, regardless of how old he is, he's physically like the best player on the floor. He's 6'10", 250. So he's creating contact. He's finishing through it. And that's something where the refs, you know, I thought they did a pretty good job most of the series kind of letting them play. But games 5 and 6 specifically, the Cavs, there was a big disparity. Magic shot 26 more free throws over those 2 games than the Cavs did. And I think it was largely because of Paolo kind of forcing the issue, and he has learned pretty quickly how to do that. And most of the season, we've had guys doing that to us, whether it's Embiid. Mitchell's really good at it. He'll get you off your feet, and he'll kind of jump into you a little bit. You know, Luka, you know, a lot of the best players in the league, that's kind of their MO. Jimmy Butler. So I think you have to have some of that. Yeah, if a guy's out of position and you see it, you got to force the issue a little bit. And the officials, I think, recognize that, you know, one of the only ways to defend Paolo is to rough him up, and a foul is a foul regardless of who it is you're defending. So Cleveland tried to hit young Paolo Banchero quite a bit, and it didn't matter because the dude is a monster.
All right, here's my thing that fascinates me about him. He really likes these jump shots, and he's proving that he can hit them at a superstar level. He kind of reminds me of LeBron a little, where, oh yeah, I can hit these shots and I'll prove it to you. Do you want him to just be shooting these jumpers moving forward? And I'd love to ask Paolo this, because I want him to attack the rim more. How do you look at his game moving forward?
Well, some of that is Paolo attacks the rim plenty. It's just the Cavs dared him to shoot those jumpers. With Mobley, and especially when Allen was healthy early in the season, they just had the paint packed. And that was not just because of Paolo. That was because of Franz and because we're not a good perimeter shooting team. So their MO for the whole series was, we're not going to let Paolo and Franz dunk all over us. And they have the guys who can do that, right? Mobley's a really good rim defender. He had 5 blocks in the last 2 games. He averaged over 3 for the series. And Jared Allen is their best rim defender. So that it's the way they built their team is Mobley helping and blocking shots from the weak side, but also able to switch out and guard guys on the perimeter. When they were at their best, Mobley was defending Paolo. And so, I think against different teams, it would look different. And again, during the regular season, Paolo got to the rack a lot, but that's what makes him special. He is a mid-range shooter. That's kind of his game. And it's because when you get him the ball and you kind of get out of the way and he's got a guy on him, whether it's Isaac Okoro, he's just going to shoot over him. And if it's Mobley, he's going to try to go right through his chest, which, you know, Mobley is better at most than defending him from doing that. But physically, it's sort of like pick your poison with him. And if you hug him up too much and he's got that first step on you, he's going to go to the rim and he's going to jam it down. You saw that a few times, but Cleveland's MO was to try to keep him from doing that. And, you know, if he hit a whole bunch of 18 and 20 foot jumpers, then God bless him. The reason the series went 7 is because he did.
Okay, I'm going to try to get a soundbite out of you as the radio voice of the Orlando Magic with the Magic Audio Network. They had Shaq. They had Dwight Howard. This guy's 21. Does he have the potential to be a super-duper star for the Orlando Magic?
Oh, for sure. I mean, don't forget Tracy McGrady in that.
Yeah.
And even Penny Hardaway, I think, was that level of player. I think for sure. I mean, you know, you bring up LeBron, and I think LeBron was a more complete player, obviously. Actually, I don't even know if I should say obviously. I think he was. But, like, Paolo's different. You know, Paolo's got shades of Carmelo, kind of, with the way he shoots that long two, with his size and with how offensively he's just, you know, he's kind of undeniable at times. But he has grown so much in 2 years. And, you know, those are the names that you're hearing when you say, started his playoff career with 3 straight 20-point games, or the youngest to score 30-plus twice in a playoff series since. It's LeBron, it's Luka, it's Shaq. I mean, you know, when you're talking about the franchise stuff, yeah, absolutely. He has the potential to be that good. Is he going to be a 3-time Defensive Player of the Year award winner like Dwight? No, probably not. But he is he's something pretty special for his age. And, Mark, what struck me the most is, like, you know, and you and I have been around him, and we've seen him since he came in. At the very least, we know sort of how he's wired. Like, he's just kind of like a robot.
Yes.
He's just sort of got that cool, calm, collected demeanor no matter what. But, boy, he likes the bigger stages, don't he? I mean, as more and more people started talking about the series, and now game 7, the only game on, we're on primetime, ABC, he just seems to elevate his game the bigger the spotlight gets. And that's something that only few players who come around every once in a while seem to be able to do. So that's what I think is most special about him.
Okay, as the fanboy in me, here's what I will say. The future of the NBA, you're seeing it right now. Anthony Edwards on Minnesota has the potential to be the man. Paolo Banchero, Wemby with San Antonio, and maybe some of these guys in Oklahoma City. Like, this is the changing of the guard. These are the next guys that could be super-duper stars. Do you feel that way?
I think that's fair, but I also think some of this conversation, and I know you didn't just say it, but I'm going to say it because everybody else has been saying it, is about how, like, LeBron and Steph are washed, right, because they're not in the second round of the playoffs. And it's like, just watch the regular season. Like, those dudes are still pretty good. They're just not on great teams right now.
Yeah.
I think Golden State needs to make some changes, but Steph is still probably, should, I think, still be, like, an all-NBA selection this year, and LeBron as well. KD as well. And then let's not forget about Giannis and Jokic. Giannis has been hurt the last 2 years. That's kind of a blow to his legacy for sure. And Embiid always seems to be hurt. But there's a whole bunch of really good players in this league, man. I mean, there's Tatum, there's Doncic. It's a pretty special place. But you're right. Like, Anthony Edwards is next. I think Paolo Banchero is next. I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is freaking spectacular in Oklahoma. And I'm so happy the Western Conference is we're getting a look at Minnesota and the way they built it in Oklahoma. I love it when we have small market teams who drafted properly and developed and then went all in. And I think we have a whole bunch of good instances and good examples of that in the second round of this series. You could talk about Cleveland, the way they rebuild after LeBron. That's a great story. And even the Knicks. The Knicks went out and got one guy who nobody, you know, had the foresight to really recognize he's that special in Jalen Brunson. And they've made a whole bunch of really good moves, too. So I think the league is in such a good place talent-wise. And what I always appreciate is when in Orlando can get on the stage that we were on this year because we found the right guy and because we drafted Franz and Jalen as well and got the right sort of core. I think that's what the NBA's been striving for a long time. You want every team to feel like they have a chance if they just find the right guy in the draft or if they develop properly, and I think we've seen a lot of examples of that. And then I do enjoy the fact that the Clippers are out and the Suns are out and the Brooklyn Nets had to rebuild and that didn't work. The idea that you can just microwave it and build super teams, it's a lot more difficult than that. So sometimes it works, but usually it doesn't.
When we look at the offseason, and that was well said, by the way. I agree with everything you're saying there. You look at that draft 2 years ago. The Magic needed shooting. They needed a guard. They needed shooting. And the front office said, yeah, that's great, but we better take this Paolo Banchero guy. And it was the best pick maybe they've done in a long time. He is the guy. But now when I go in the offseason, do they still need shooting and perimeter help moving forward with this franchise?
Yes. Short answer is yes. I think there's a chance that you get some internal development. Like, I don't know if we'll go out and throw a bunch of money around at free agency. Jeff Weltman hasn't shown that, you know, he's a riverboat type of guy, right? Everything's always been very measured, and that's what I think has led to this success, right? Anytime you have guys who are looking to make a splash, typically something bad happens, and you know we want to be smart about this. We've got a really good young core, and they're going to get paid eventually. But you want to do whoever it is you bring in, you want to make sure fits and isn't going to take a bunch of shots away from Paolo and Franz and Jalen. But with that said, if you make a move, or no matter what, like the perimeter shooting needs to be better in order to get where you want to get. So if you feel comfortable that our guys are going to get better at that, you certainly saw signs of growth from guys like Jalen this year. I think Franz will be a much better 3-point shooter next year than he was this year. I think this was an anomaly. I think you'll be okay with hoping that there's internal development as far as shooting the ball goes. Think about a guy like Jet Howard. Does he play a bigger role? Or Caleb Houston? Those guys are both shooters. Anthony Black, is he on the floor? And what's his jumper look like? I think there's a chance that you count on that and you kind of keep everything close and you don't screw up your flexibility for the next few seasons. But no matter what it is, whatever moves you make, I think you're going to have perimeter shooting in the back of your mind for sure.
This is my thing, and I'll let you go, and I appreciate coming on. I know it's been nonstop for you for the last couple of months.
Always.
Okay, Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner are untouchable, and the number one thing, like if I'm Jeff Weltman, they're getting money, right? I'm not going to give Paul George $250 million and then, oh, it's Paul George's team. No, it's Paolo and Franz's team. And I go young and I build this team. That's how I approach it. Is that okay if I feel that way?
Yeah, well said. I think that's, you know, I don't want to get into specific free agents, but I tend to agree with you. I think if the deal is right and you feel like this guy is perfect, then okay. But he better be perfect. And you know what? And as I know this makes people uncomfortable, but you know, I want to know Paolo's and Franz's and Jalen's and my young core's opinion on whatever it is I'm doing.
Yes.
If I'm doing something that monumental, right? If I'm bringing in Joe Ingles on a 1 or 2 year deal, you know, signing a veteran, no, I don't need to sign up. But like something like that is because you're right. Like if you sign a big, big name free agent to big, big money, then you're splitting ownership of the franchise, right? Or whatever, like however you want to phrase it. There's only one basketball, and we know who our primary players are going to be moving forward, and they're young and still developing. So before you make a massive move like that, you better make sure that their development isn't going to be hampered. We'll put it like that.
Are you going to take a vacation now?
Yes. next week is my daughter's birthday, her first birthday. Nice. It's a week from Sunday, and so we have a Airbnb all booked up in New Smyrna Beach for next Thursday through next Monday. And so we'll be out there, family coming in from Ohio and from Pennsylvania, and then girlfriend's family coming up from down south. So it's going to be, that's going to be a lot of fun. And then I've got a nice trip to Ohio, as most people's vacation. I know everybody loves to go to Ohio for vacation. That'll be in August. But we'll do a couple weekend trips here coming up and just get to spend time with my daughter this summer. So that's really what I'm looking forward to.
And the thing is, you'd rather not go to New Smyrna Beach, right? You'd rather keep going. Come on.
Exactly. Exactly. That was the that was the messed up part yesterday, Mark. Like, we were packed to go straight from Cleveland to Boston. Game two is game one is tomorrow for the Cavs and the Celtics. So I was, you know, my girlfriend's freaking out because, you know, we've got an 11-month-old, two dogs and a cat at home. And
wow.
She's like, so if you lose, you come home, and if you win, you're in Boston until Thursday. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of how this whole thing works. So it's the silver lining. I mean, you're right. Like, we would definitely, if we had won that game, then you see what happens. Then you go to Boston, and if you could steal a game, holy smokes, who thought we would have been on that stage? Wow. But the silver lining, when all is said and done, is time with the fam. And so that's always a nice kind of fallback plan.
My favorite part is when I see Jake, and you know, you're with all your guys are going to do the game, and I saw you, like, I don't know, 45 seconds before you go on. And you got that look on your face. And I like that look because I get that look too. Right before you're going to go on the air, let's go, baby. I'm ready. That's my favorite part.
Yep.
It is.
Let's get it. That's what I say.
Jake Chapman, my man, thanks for your help. And hey, it was a great season. I appreciate you coming on all season long. All right.
Okay, buddy. I appreciate you. We'll talk soon. Okay.